Well, hi there, TJs. John, the editor here. I recently spoke to Chris Jones, CEO of City & Guilds. He was talking to me in advance of the City & Guilds 140th anniversary, which happened yesterday as we were talking, Thursday, 31st of January. There was a ceremony and awards at the Guildhall, right in the middle of the City of London. The president of City & Guilds, Princess Anne, was there, and very many other luminaries. But before that, I sat down with Chris to wish him a very happy 140th, and also to talk about how City & Guilds had changed over time and what businesses need to do to succeed in this pressured environment. Enjoy. It's a big day for City & Guilds. First of all, happy 140th anniversary.
Well, thank you very much. We're excited at our birthday celebrations today. It's been a long time coming, but we're looking forward to it.
I think there's obviously things that will have will have stayed the same and changed, but how do you think the purpose of City & Guilds has changed over this time?
Well, I think it's really interesting. You know, the purpose of the organisation today, in many respects, remains exactly the same as it did when we were set up some 140 years ago. And very simply, you know, everything that we do is designed to help people into jobs. We're helping them develop on the job, and then we're helping them progress onto that next job. And in doing so, we're also helping sort of organisations and the wider economies develop the skills that they need to grow and to generate growth and economic prosperity. And that is very much what we set out to do when the livery companies and the City of London came together to establish the Institute 140 years ago. Now, things are a little bit different, obviously. You know, back in 1878, 1879, you know, we had 202 students sitting exams. We had technical colleges, not only to train individuals, but also to train the trainer. One of the key objectives of the Institute was to build capacity to support the need for wider technical training. Today, you know, we're supporting around about 3 million people a year. Still doing that largely through assessment and examinations that people would know and love as City & Guilds. But we are now much more global. We're much more digital. We're working much more with corporates using learning technologies. But we also still are true to our roots. We have our own technical training business based up in Cumbria that today is still a classic environment for delivering high quality technical engineering to support nuclear and advanced engineering manufacturing. So there's an awful lot of what we see today in what we set out to do 140 years ago.
So another thing that's very important to City & Guilds and businesses in general is the apprenticeship levy, and there's been a number of changes since its inception, but what do you think the government can do to raise awareness of the apprenticeship levy this year?
You know, I think it's good to see, first of all, that we're seeing some stabilisation in apprenticeship starts. You know, it's been widely reported since the introduction of the levy that apprenticeship starts have fallen away, and certainly in that first year fell away quite dramatically. We're now seeing a level of stabilisation, and we're beginning to see, you know, some quarter-on-quarter growth in terms of apprenticeship starts, you know, although that's really based on some provisional start data. We won't really know if it started to turn and grow again until sort of the final information is published later this year. It's good to see the government also reigniting some of the wider promotion, and particularly on TV at the moment. And I think that's a good thing, because we still know that we have to raise awareness of apprenticeships with parents as much as we have to make sure that we are supporting employers in understanding how they can better utilise the levy to support, you know, long-term workforce development. It's quite clear, though, still, that obviously the levy is not being as well utilised as it could be. And we published a piece of research earlier this month, Flex for Success. We had 12 recommendations for government, which, you know, we genuinely believe 11 of which of those recommendations are for government. And part of that is to make sure that they are providing more clarity about the amount of levy left in the system and the amount that will be returned to employers from April 1st. So we can see, you know, and support those organizations delivering apprenticeships to plan more effectively. We need to make better use of the data that is now being generated off the back of the levy. And we clearly need to adopt a more flexible approach to implementation to suit different industries and business sizes. And I think lastly, as we see, you know, we have to do more to provide support to the SMEs, because they at the moment are the ones still driving most of the apprenticeship starts at that crucial sort of level two, level three. It is quite interesting when you look at the split between large employers or levy versus non-levy. You know, the levy payers clearly driving level four and level three. Much of that is around leadership and management. The SMEs are still that core part of the market, providing access to younger people to worthwhile and meaningful jobs.
So I started in L&D almost a decade ago, and people were talking about a skills gap then, and we're still talking about a skills gap now. So
yes.
What do you think businesses are not doing that they should be doing to address this, which has been going on for so long?
Yeah, well, we've literally just published a new piece of research, Learning Next, to align with our 140th anniversary. And it's pretty clear from that research, and that was research designed to sample what employee perspectives were in terms of the training and the support they had. You know, we surveyed some 2,500 or so workers across the UK. And what's clear is 76% of the workforce, you know, clearly believe that it's important to update their skills continuously, but less than half of those are getting enough help and support from the employer to develop workplace skills. Some 33%, and nearly a third of workers, said to us they weren't learning new workplace skills in the past 12 months. So it's very, very clear, and as we've seen from the Social Mobility Commission this week, as we've seen from the Chartered Institute of Personal Directors, the level of investment that employers are making into training continues to reduce. And we need to address that with a matter of urgency. And we need to address that at all levels and all stages, if you like. So, you know, it's crucial that we're retraining the older workforce, because they're going to become a more important part of the total workforce over the coming years. But only 48% of 55-year-olds, you know, were saying that they learned some new skills in the last year. So there just is simply not enough activity. And we clearly need to think differently about the sort of training we're delivering. It's not all about sending people off on training courses. It's not all about e-learning. You know, we need to look at both the informal, the on-the-job, you know, supporting and encouraging learning and relearning. We need to do more about coaching and mentoring. So we need a more holistic approach to training and development. It's not simply classrooms and structured programs. It's not simply about mobile and e-learning. We have to look at this more strategically.
I've got one final question. Based on the recent research, actually, almost a quarter of workers are not getting the feedback from line managers about which skills they need to develop. So with this in mind, and this is something that TJ's also been thinking about a lot, should we be focusing more on practical line management skills instead of leadership courses, do you think?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's interesting when you look across organisations, you know, and we all have our annual sort of employee engagement scores or our sort of, you know, employee opinion scores. You know, more often than not, some of the biggest challenges that come out of that is sort of the middle manager. You know, they're often the most challenged. They have the pressure of what the business is looking to deliver bearing down on them, and they have the demands from the wider workforce coming up to them. And I think it's absolutely critical that we support those middle managers with good, solid management skills so that they can have the conversations and the dialogue with staff in the right way. You know, and this is not sort of, you know, anything that needs great sort of magic or art or science. It's about the practical, sensible skills we want managers to be able to do. You know, how do you establish trust? How do you agree expectations between yourself and your workforce? How do you show appreciation? How do you challenge unhelpful behavior? How do you support the dialogue around training, growth, and development? And then how do you facilitate that? You know, I think as we're seeing today, there's a disproportionate level of investment going into, as you say, leadership. You know, strategy is important, understanding business models is important, globalization, digital disruption are all important. But at the end of the day, we need to come back and we need to think harder about how we support the wider workforce. And that is good, strong, practical line management. We at City & Guilds Group have a leadership launchpad, a middle managers program, and those are focused on the basics of being good leaders, engaging with your people, being authentic, being genuine, telling people where they need to grow and improve, but supporting them doing that. So I absolutely agree with you. More emphasis needs to be placed on that.
Chris, thank you very much for talking to TJ. It's obviously an extremely busy day for you, but a very important one. Look forward to seeing you at the ceremony and awards later on.
Thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you too. Thank you.